Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Lynn S. and I am a recovered compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. Today is Thursday, February the 19th, 2026, and we're continuing our study of the Big Book in the chapter There is a Solution on page 20, the third paragraph, How Many Times? We'll be reading and commenting on that one paragraph only. And today's readers are the 12 Steps, Bev M, 12 Traditions, Anne Marie M, and readers of the text, Susan S.H., Wendy M., and Martha Z. The share ID for yesterday, Wednesday, February the 18th, the 7 a.m. meeting, 23219. That's 23219. And the 10 a.m. meeting, 23220. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And this morning, Bev M. is going to read the 12 steps for us. Good morning, Bev.
This is Bev M. in Wisconsin, gratefully recovered. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food and that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for allowing me to serve.
Thank you, Bev M. And Anne Marie M. is going to read the 12 traditions. Hi, Anne Marie.
Hi, Lynn. Thank you. And thank you, everyone. Good morning. The 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Thus, problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And I'll pass with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne Marie M. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our absence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book. We're in the chapter, There is a Solution, on page 20, the third paragraph, How Many Times? And this morning, Susan S.H. is going to read for us. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning, Lynn. Thank you. This is Susan S.H. in Ohio. I'm a real compulsive eater. Recovered for today. I'm grateful. How many times people have said to us, I can take it or leave it alone. Why can't he? Why don't you drink like a gentleman or quit? That fellow can't handle his liquor. Why didn't you try beer or what and wine? Lay off the hard stuff. His willpower must be weak. He could stop if he wanted to. Or she's such a sweet girl, I think he'd stop for her sake. The doctor told him that if he ever drank again, it would kill him. But there he is, all lit up again. And I looked at this, and it's kind of a laundry list. And how does that apply to me? Well, it does sound kind of familiar. I asked myself what it means to me, and it sounds a lot like the frothy emotional appeal that was discussed in the doctor's opinion. And to me, the frothy emotional appeal comes from normies, people that haven't had my problem and don't necessarily understand what it's like. And same attitude, different things. Why don't you just have a small piece of cake? I can do that. Well, I couldn't. What, don't you want to go on dates? I really did. Just have one piece of pizza. Not very likely. Can't you just eat like a lady? Oh, I so wanted to eat like a lady, but it wasn't part of the disease. And I truly couldn't. And, I have a quick little story. You know I'm recovered and I get a daily reprieve and I'm so blessed. A couple days ago, my husband and I got a text, which kind of upset both of us just as we were sitting down to eat. And the reaction between a normie and me is he was, I don't know if I can eat. I feel kind of queasy. Me, I was on that meal. I ate it, and I ate it right then. And it illustrated, I have this disease. You know, it's not gone, but it's in remission as long as I take all my fears and my worries and the things I can't handle myself, which is a lot, to my higher power. So yeah. Those list of things is very familiar to me, just a little different tone because it was about what I was eating. Do you really need that? And at the time I did. So grateful to be here, grateful every day for a daily reprieve, and I'll pass.
Thank you for getting us started, Susan H. S.H. The line is now open for sharing on what we just read. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day so that others may share their experience too. So if you shared on Tuesday or Wednesday, please step back and let others have their turn. And please, say your name just once. It really does help me hear everybody. Who would like to share?
Ross M.
Rivka R., Baltimore.
Esther K.
Christina L.
Okay, I missed somebody there. If you can just give
Esther
me a second,
K.
I'll read out the list. Yeah, I got you, Esther. Thank you. I've got Russ M., Rivka R., Esther K., Christine L., and there was somebody I missed. Who was that, please?
Reva P.
Hi, Reva.
Hey there.
Okay, anybody else?
Judith S.P.
Great. Okay, let's go with this lineup, please, then. We've got Russ M., Rivka R., Esther K., Christina L., Reva P., and Judith S.P. Russ M., good morning.
Good morning, Lynn. Doing a great job. Russ M., recover compulsive overeater. You know, I hear this, these conditions, and I think, like, man, dude, they could have sewed my mouth up, broke my hands, and I still would have figured out a way to get my hit, to get high, to eat. You know, I tried everything, the pills, potions, lotions, exercise. I always, you know, my same story, $100,000 in clothes and blown businesses, and nothing stopped me. I had a phys ed teacher. I was 14 in high school. I'll never forget it because it scarred me. He said, in front of me, he said, boy, if you don't stop eating, you're going to be dead by your 20, by the time you're 20. And after school, I went and binged, you know. So until I was at the lowest point, until I had no other option, I couldn't get free. So, you know, that obsession of the mind, an allergy of the body. You know, I want to blame it on genetics. Oh, it's my genetics. I think the only genetics it was when I was genetically stuffing it down my throat. And, you know, I am hard on myself with it, even though it's a disease, because I know the manipulator that I am. They go hand in hand. I know how dirty this disease is, but I also know how, you know, I can be just as dirty in conjunction with it. So what I'm getting at is that what's on these pages is, if you never saw a picture of me, that's exactly what it is. What's, you know, if you didn't know me, you'll know me by reading this. But, you know, there's hope, and I'm free now. Because I did what my sponsor told me. I was desperate enough, and it kind of cracked it. It broke down the obsession. And as long as I'm doing this, as long as I'm living this way of life, as long as I'm helping another person, as long as I'm getting out of myself and working these steps in every aspect of my life, I could be free. And, you know, I'm trying to keep it as simple as that, because you know how complicated you can be. A human being, just in general, not even a compulsive overeater or addict, junkie. you know, just a regular person can complicate things. So I'm trying to keep it as simple as possible. And if it's not for this program and this meeting in particular, I'd probably be dead a long time ago. And that's not being dramatic. That's just what the heck it is. So, all right. Love you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. You need me, I'm here.
Thank you, Russ M. And I think Russ is from Philly. Next up, we have Rivka R., followed by Esther K. Good morning, Rivka.
Good morning, Lynn. Thank you so much for your service, and Susan and Russ for your great shares. So related. Rivka R., gratefully recovered, compulsive overeater in Maryland. I heard a lot of this stuff, and, you know, a lot of this I told myself, you know, because of my own misunderstanding, you know, lay off the hard stuff. Just eat carrots instead of cookies, and just eat protein and vegetables, you know. And I could stop if I wanted to. I just don't have no willpower. You know, this time I'll get the weight off and I'll keep it off. And I tried, like Russ said, everything, keto, vegan, you know, all the diet shots and pills. And, you know, I had a relative tell me, just run around the block 10 times when you eat a little extra, as if I could somehow out in my eating. And you know, unfortunately, there's ignorance and misunderstanding in the rooms, too. Like just a few days ago, a woman told me that her sponsor told her that we only eat nuts when we're traveling. And I'm like, what? Like, what does traveling have to do with anything? Like, either it's a food I have an abnormal reaction to that arouses the phenomenon of craving, or it isn't. Like, to tell someone they can only eat a certain food when they're traveling, like, it's a huge misunderstanding. Like, so the solution outlined in the big book is, for me, really the only solution, because it finally got me to stop pretending that I could do it. Like, you know, I inhabit a different world from all those people who are helped by strategies like be mindful, just clean out your kitchen, just find alternative coping strategies. In my world, those are all backwards. Like, I can only do these things when the food is down and I'm working the 12 steps, because then I get to see the havoc my ego creates. And I'm gifted with a whole new perspective and, you know, the need for honesty and humility and God. And it shows me how to grow and maintain that connection with God so I can serve my ego less and serve God more. And that enables me to do all those other things like being mindful. And I think the most important thing for me is it shows me how to be real. I think the worst thing about this disease for me is that I pretended it life. I pretended I enjoyed being with people when all I cared about was the food. I pretended that I cared about you when all I cared about was that what you thought of me. I pretended I was happy and excited at my daughter's wedding when I was dying inside of shame because I was fat. I pretended I loved my husband, but I was too self-obsessed to know anything about love. And it's interesting, like the more God becomes real in my life, the more I find that I become real. And I can finally see that my ego and its illusions are not real, and that's one of the greatest joys. And, you know, it occurred to me that, you know, I can go then from being a mess to a miracle, and that's what this is all about, and it's there for everyone. So have a great day, everyone, and I pass.
Thank you, Rivka R. from Maryland. Esther K., it's your turn, followed by Christina L. And where are you calling from, please, Esther?
Hi, I'm Esther K. from Georgia. I heard so many times my relative says, you're such a pretty face. Why you cannot stop eating? I had gastric bypass surgery in 2003. Because my mom and my sister, they literally were driving me crazy, literally. And it didn't work. I lost 50 pounds, and again, on my way back. I lost my father 3.5 months ago, and I was on Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon, we were having lunch, and my mom kept saying to me, oh, you should have been shot, you should have been shot. And my father looked at my mom and said, she's okay. She's doing fantastic. Leave her alone. And for me, what a gift. He passed away 2 days later. And I keep that, I hold on that. And that's what's helping me to keep abstinent. Because it's not the size, it's not the shots, it's not the gastric bypass surgery. is the willingness to surrender and surrender the food. Right now, I'm going through cancer, and I'm having surgery 2 weeks from yesterday, and I'm surrender. Yesterday, I was praising God, says, thank you. I'm having my surgery at 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm looking for everything that is positive in my life instead of seeing the negative. And not listening. I eat 4 times a day, nothing in between, water, and that's the end of it. And it's such a gift not to worry about what I'm going to eat. I send it to my sponsor. That's it. And that's the end of it. And that is what I wanted, actually. That was the gift that I wanted. Yes, when I have the surgery, I will see what happened. I will pass that bridge. I will talk to the higher power to help me to cross that bridge. And I will prepare. I will have food ahead of time. My husband is a great helper. My daughters are great helpers. So I'll cross that bridge. And because I have the program, I'll be able to ask for help. Before, I would never ask for help. God forbid, Esther was Miss Perfect. So now, because of the program, I can ask for help, and they can help me, and with a smile and with a gratitude. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you, Esther K. from Georgia. Next up is Christina L., followed by Reva P. Hi, Christina. Please go ahead.
Hi, Lynn. Good morning. This is Christina L., recovered compulsive overeater in Florida. And, I don't really relate to too much of what's described in this particular paragraph. Those weren't the things that I was told. But what I was told was, if I lose the weight, then the boys will notice me. If I lose the weight, then I'll get a boyfriend. That did not work. And then I had a family member's mother-in-law tell me my sister and my cousin, actually, that if we exercise like her, then we would look like that too. When we were watching, I think it was a movie. I don't even know what it was, but that was a long time ago. And, you know, no matter what anybody says, like, that's not going to change. And there were things that even, you know, my own misunderstanding, like, was mentioned, of thinking that if I just have a measured portion of what it says, like, on the label, like, it says a serving is 1 cup. So if I have a cup, then I'll be okay. And that didn't work either. It did, actually, when I was younger, before my disease had taken me to the point of no return. But it's definitely not something that I can do today. And then the whole putting the whiskey in the milk kind of thing. Well, it's a natural sugar. It's healthy. It's natural. It's blended with all the other flavors, so I don't taste it. It don't work that way. My body knows, no matter what. And so I'm just really grateful for the for the willingness to just be honest about the things that are triggers for me, about having the understanding that I didn't have before this program. And so anyways, that's all I got. With that, I'll pass. Thanks for letting me share, and I hope everybody has a great day.
Thank you, Christina L. in Florida. Next up, we have Reva P., followed by Judith S. P. Good morning, Reva.
Good morning, Lynn. This is Reva P., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. Yeah, frothy emotional appeal or medical consequences. I have memories of my mother taking me to the doctor in my anorexic phase and hearing some of the consequences. And I remember being given information about the consequences medically of bulimia, and it didn't make a difference. And all those comments to me are a reminder that somebody who is not a compulsive overeater just does not have the proper information to help me unless they're educated about Overeaters Anonymous. And I didn't get these comments so much from others as much as from myself. What is wrong with you? Why can't you do this? You know better. You know, you're so smart in these areas. Why can't you control the food? That was the torment. That was almost as difficult as the physical. The mental torment of knowing what I was doing was killing me, and I couldn't stop. No matter how much I tried, no matter how smart I was. And this also reminds me of focusing on what the food is doing to me as opposed to what it's doing for me. I needed it. I needed it until I got into this program and I got the proper information. So, you know, for me, this chapter really hits home who I'm not. I'm not a moderate eater, hard eater, normal eater. I can't use these kinds of appeals and will myself out of this disease. Thank you, God, for the people who have educated me about my diagnosis, that I have a physical allergy and a mental obsession, and that my problem is lack of power. Who'd have thought? Lack of power. Yeah, it was just so unusual compared to anything else I had ever heard, but it worked and it still works. And I can't will myself out of the food. I can't will myself out of defects. I need to do what it says to do in this book and access power, whether it's food, whether it's anger, whether it's fear. I need that power. Yeah, all these little slogany things without the steps, without depth and weight, just really don't work. So thank you, God, for the reminder. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Reva P. from Toronto, Canada. Judith S. P., it's your turn. Good morning.
Good morning, Lynn. This is Judith S. P. from Maryland, on my way back from Texas. Yeah, truly grateful to be recovered this moment. When I heard, read, and many, many of the shares, my mind and my spirit went in a little bit of a different direction. You know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. When I was in my disease, and it was really for many, many years, the physical part of it was an issue more for me than anybody else. No one really commented other than my mother periodically, you know, don't eat that. You'd look better if you didn't. But what really hit me and people tried to help me with, and even particularly the psychiatric world, was my emotional insanity and my mental craziness that perceived the world in a way that I was either the victim or I was to be the one in charge. And when I heard read today, as I've heard before, many of these questions, they're all human questions. This program has nothing to do for me with getting my solution from human beings. And I also realized when I heard the questions that I say that in my head, but many times before program and even in program, I say that to other people. Why don't you go this way instead of that way? Why are you going to live in Texas? Come back to Maryland. Why don't you this? How could you have that happen with you? You know, on and on. I can be the director all over the place. So what I'm realizing every moment, and you will give me the encouragement and the experience to remember it, my only solution for a disease that I don't have to worry about, why do I have it? That has nothing to do with anything. I'm looking for the solution is a power greater than myself. And then I turn that around. And even if I have an, ooh, I want to say something, I say, Judith, everybody has a higher power. Whether they access it or not is up to them. But you're not in charge. And you're also somebody who does have a voice and can kindly and gently present whatever it is you're presenting. And I don't know, it was just a little additional light bulb this morning. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you, Judith S.P. For those of us who might have come on the line a little bit later this morning, just to let you know where we are, we're continuing our study of the Big Book in the chapter, There is a Solution. And we're on page 20, the third paragraph, How Many Times? The line is now open for sharing on what we just read. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day so that others may share their experience too. So if you shared on Tuesday or Wednesday, please step back and let others have their turn. And please say your name just once. It really does help me hear everybody. Who would like to share?
Michelle M. in Connecticut.
Ken W.
Okay, hang on just a second, please, and let me tell you who I heard, okay, because everybody was at once. But I know I heard Ken W. H., and I heard Shanna C., and now there was a lot of other people. Who else was there, please?
Michelle L. in Connecticut.
Okay, hang on. Sorry, everybody came in again at once, but I heard Connecticut.
Yes, Laura L.
Laura L. Okay, we're getting there, everybody. Now, who else?
Michelle.
Okay, hang on. I got Michelle, somebody or other.
Maura Z.
Maura, for heaven's sake. Maura Z. Okay, who else?
Felicia S. from New Jersey.
There we go. Felicia, I knew I heard you in the background. Okay, now, did I miss anybody? I've got Ken W.H., Shanna C., Laura L., Michelle, Maura Z., and Felicia S. Who did I miss?
Yvonne C.
Yvonne. Okay. There we go. Thank you for everybody. Boy, oh boy, we did it. Okay. Ken W.H., good morning, followed by Shanna C. Hi, Ken.
Thank you for unscrambling us. This is Ken W.H. from North Carolina, recovered compulsive overeater. There are 9 basic statements in this paragraph, and 6 of them are not directed at me. They are directed... They're basically gossip, people talking to each other and saying, why can't he do this? Why can't she do that? And why? They're all asking the question, but I hear it as gossip, most of it. And gossip is another way of expressing, at least as I understand it, disdain for looking at someone and expressing some form of disdain for their behavior, for their looks, for who they are, their identity, any number of things. And that's what I'm hearing here. And unfortunately, only 3 of those speak directly to me, and they are why questions out of ignorance. And I have to remember that if you don't have this thing, you just don't know. You just don't know. And it's like somebody trying to give comfort to someone who's lost a loved one, and they say, I know how you feel. Well, no, you don't. You don't have any idea how I feel. Just simply be as compassionate as possible if you're in fact going to try to address me about something you see in me. Do it in a way that expresses a desire for me to be well, and I have the chance of listening. But if you're standing off in a corner with a group of people looking over at me, and I know you're talking about me, you're not helping a bit. And I just need to remember that I have the disease, and I know what it is, and I know what it does to me, and I don't want to do that anymore. And I don't. And that's the good news. That's the good news of recovery. So hang tough. Don't listen. Just listen to what your God is trying to say to you today and to me. And I pass today. Thanks.
Thank you, Ken W.H. from North Carolina. Shanna C., good morning, followed by Laura L. Hi, Shanna, and where are you calling from, please?
Good morning, Lynn. This is Shanna C., grateful recovered compulsive overeater from Tennessee.
Currently in Jacksonville, Florida, temporarily. Grateful to be online, grateful for the miracle that has happened in my life, that where I don't find it necessary to eat like I used to and the things that I used to. It's truly a miracle, and I'm not just saying that. I mean, for someone like me who can't stop thinking about how much she weighs, how much she eats, what people are thinking about how she looks, they notice that I've gained weight. What am I going to do? I'm managing other people's feelings in my own head, and they have no clue that's what's happening. That's part of the mental obsession, because this disease for me is, you know, it's not just about the food and what I want to eat. It's about the obsession over everything and the constant fear and tension that makes for more eating and dieting and the next thing. The question that really jumps out at me when these pages are read is all of these people that are identifying with how other people, like the people that wrote the book, are listing all the ways they feel judged by other people. The question is what is enabling them to have the power to continue to stay sober? What is it, where are they getting the power to go to any place where alcohol is served and remain safe and protected? What is happening in these people? That's the question. You know, and one of the things I know that I've done in the past, even on this meeting, it doesn't have to be outside people who don't understand compulsive eating. I can feel judged and worry about what people on the meeting say about what I eat. I can listen to someone else share this about what they can or cannot have, and then I'm like, oh my God, I'm doing it wrong. And then the next one over here says, well, they can have this and this and that. Well, they can have it. Well, maybe can I can too. One thing that has absolutely helped me more than anything, absolutely anything, is getting that gift of desperation and understanding that I absolutely can trust the God of my understanding to help me truly see what flips my switch and what doesn't, what behaviors and foods flip my switch as an individual, come to real terms with that and ask and believe God for that, be willing to believe, and ask for the strength to stick to that food plan alone, not comparing, because that nearly killed me, and that is part of my disease as well. So if anyone's new on here that's like really confused about the rottenness and wrongness of it, for me, my experience has been getting really clear on what works and what doesn't, sticking to that and asking the God of my understanding to help me stick to it every single day, working through these steps and doing what I need to do on a daily. And I sure enough found the promises that have kept me from worrying so much about those people who don't understand. Because I need real power to continue to do it. See, people, the way I eat, people are like, it's not sustainable. You're right. It's not sustainable by someone of using time human power. But thanks be to God, there is a power out there that wants to help. The caring and loving God that this big book talks about. Anyway, that's all I have. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Shanna C. from Tennessee. Next up is Laura L., followed by Michelle. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning. Hey, everybody. I'm Laura L. from Connecticut, and I'm a compulsive overeater. Very grateful to be on the phone today and to be in this program. Saved my life. Thank you for everybody who shared. I echo almost everything that was said. I was thinking that one of the most corrosive elements of this disease is, one of them has been shame for me. And, you know, I started overeating when I was 11 and I got into program when I was 41. And, you know, by the grace of God, I'm abstinent and recovered. And yeah, in a very good place right now. However, the shame has been extremely hard to extricate and to surrender and to give up. And I think, you know, what everybody has said and what's said in this paragraph happened to me over and over and over. I mean, I had constant berating over my eating and my weight since a very young age. And then it continued throughout my life. Not only from my mother, but from, you know, I remember going back to a job that I had left for another job. And I was thin when I left this job. And when I went back and said, hey, to everybody, I was heavier. And I was extremely self-conscious, you know, and I still have that feeling. But I overheard people talking about me in the next room saying, oh my God, did you see her? Did you see what she looks like? She's gained it all back. And this was when I was in my 20s, and it reinforced everything that I was taught to believe about myself, that I was, you know, worthless, ugly, and, you know, the whole long list. And that's happened before, or my mother would say that that other people had seen me, neighbors, and said, oh, you know, that whole thing about, oh, she'd be so pretty if she could only take off 20 pounds or, you know, whatever. And so, you know, my only goals when I was little was to grow up, be thin, be pretty, and be happy, because I was depressed. I didn't know that word then, but I was miserable, hated myself, and I thought I was ugly. And it's just so sad. And it's taken a long time to get that, to beat the shame down, or not, that sounds too violent, I'm sorry, but to overcome it. So, but if it hadn't been for this program, I could not have done that. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Laura L. from Connecticut. Next up, we have Michelle, followed by Maura Zved. So Michelle, can we have your last initial, please, and where you're calling from?
Yes, good morning, Lynn. This is Michelle M. from Arizona, recovered compulsive eater. And I'm really, my brain is really percolating with all of the things that I'm hearing this morning. And it takes me to, last weekend I was having breakfast with my sister. And I ordered something and I said, is there sugar in this? And they said, yes. And I said, okay, that's a hard no. And my sister is allergic to strawberries. And they brought her something and the strawberries had touched something on her plate. And she's like, I can't eat this. I am allergic to strawberries. So then she was asking me, so what is it about the sugar? And I just said, you know what? I have an allergy. I don't know. I can't explain it. I don't care. It just is. And she was really persistent about it. And it was Kodak moment. Here is somebody who is allergic to strawberries, will not eat them, cannot even have them touch anything that she's eating. But she can't understand my allergy to sugar, you know, and to alcohol and all of that stuff. And it was like, you know, we see fighting everything and everyone. And I felt, because of this program and the work that I'm doing, that need to be heard, you need to understand why I'm this way so you won't judge me and I won't be in fear of your judgment, really slipped away, you know. And I was a hostage of that for so long, you know, and all of this frothy emotional appeal. I mean, I was frothy emotional appeal. You know, trying to get people to feel sorry for me, to validate why I was behaving the way I was. And I'm especially seeing that now in another round of step 9, writing my letters. And so I am just so grateful to where I am today from where I was when I was 6 years old and my mother was putting me on grapefruit and egg diet. And that I have an allergy. And even somebody that doesn't have my allergy, they have their own, they don't get it. But we do. And I'm so grateful for this fellowship who understands that. And I'm just going to continue to be happily allergic to sugar and everything else and stay in recovery. Thanks. And I'll pass with that.
Thank you, Michelle M. from Arizona. Maura Zved, it's your turn, followed by Felicia S. Hi, Maura.
Hi, Lynn. How are you this morning? Thanks
Good,
for your
thank
service.
You.
And I'm Maura Z, and I'm in Virginia, and I am gratefully recovered this morning.
a gazillion questions. And I have to admit something that I'm not necessarily proud of, but I have to admit that in my early years in OA, when I thought I was all that and a freaking bag of chips, I would ask myself, how do they get so big? Because you see, I was never 200 pounds or more. And I'm grateful for that today. But I would have the audacity in my brain and the arrogance and the ego to ask, how does that happen? Why can't they fill in the blank? And it is because I was still ignorant of what goes on in the life of a compulsive overeater, even though I was one, and I am one, and I will always be a compulsive overeater. This is part of my DNA. It's never going to change. What changes is a gift from God on a daily basis. As long as I pursue that gift, as long as I continue to work these steps, as long as I continue to ask God for help, for things that I cannot do for myself, for things that I cannot do by myself. This is the only question I need to be asking. What God would you have me be today? What service can I do today for some other still suffering compulsive overeater? These are the questions that I need to concern myself with today. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks, Lynn.
Thank you, Maura Z from Virginia. Now we have Felicia S., followed by Yvonne C. Hi, Felicia.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you all for your service. I am Felicia S. from New Jersey. Oh, you know, so much. I'm so grateful to be on this call and hear what everybody is saying. One of the saddest moments of my life is when I was standing in a place and I got into a certain size that I thought was the magic number. And I still wanted to die. I thought that was the answer to all my problems. And it was the answer to nothing. It actually increased my problems. And that was years ago. And I kept in the same cycle, chasing a number, chasing control and weight and sickness and fighting to stay sick. And, you know, doctors would tell me I'm going to die. And it, you know, I had multiple heart attacks and none of it was enough to create that permanent change that was required. It just wasn't. And I am so incredibly grateful that after all of these decades of relapse, that 8 months ago, you know, I don't know what changed, but I'm off the merry-go-round. And, you know, I tried all of the diets and all of the things, and it was all about control. And surrender was the answer. And I would have told you it was the opposite because I was just so sick. And I relate so much to these pages because they saved my life. Thank you.
Thank you, Felicia from New Jersey. Yvonne C., good morning. Please press star 1 to unmute, Yvonne.
My apologies. This is Yvonne C. from Michigan. And Lynn, thank you so much for your service this morning. And thank you for everyone you shared. I love this passage because it speaks to how I used to speak to myself. I could never understand why I couldn't eat like my friends or why I couldn't eat like that person on that magazine cover, why I couldn't be the quote-unquote perfect size. And that's the mental obsession that I had. And I was led to just really lean into this group. I've been listening to this group probably for 3 years now, and lean into this group and hear the stories of strength and hope and experience and courage, and being open to my higher power leading me to the way out of this. And it started with connecting with a functional medicine doctor who did a blood test on me and found out that I literally was causing inflammation in my body with all of the quote-unquote healthy foods I was eating. And once I stopped those foods, I was able to feel better and not have to eat to feel better, because when I ate, I would get that little bit of rush and I'd feel better for a little while. But I was able to connect with my body and see what foods fueled me and what foods did not. And then the next was emotional. I was not emotionally sober. I did not live the 12 steps every day. I allowed other people, places, and things to impact me, impact how I thought, how I led my life. So I worked with a wonderful coach, and I have an amazing sponsor who is just so loving and gracious. And they have helped me see that I need to focus and trust on God. And so that is the spiritual side of this disease. And when I am clean in my head and in my prayers and in my intentions and my food plan every day, and when I admit my faults to my sponsor, and I have such a loving sponsor, I tell on myself when I go off my food plan, or if I'm having trouble thinking of a certain thing or having a relationship thing. And she's so loving. She just brings me back to center and brings me back to trusting in higher power. So I'm so thankful for this program. And thank you all for letting me share. With that, I pass.
Thank you, Yvonne C. from Michigan. We have time for one more 3-minute share. Who would like that, please?
CK in California.
CK from California. Please go ahead.
Peace, family. This is CK in California. And today is day 494 for me. And I'm very grateful. The thing that jumped out at the page for me today was the line about you know, having a good woman. She's such a sweet girl, you know, why not stop for her? And for me, aside from my last relationship, when I was in a relationship with a so-called recovered compulsive eater, I have been blessed with really amazing women in my life. And these women really care for me and love me so much. And like it says on page 178 in the big book, for some reason, we alcoholics seem to have the gift of picking out the world's finest women. Why they should be subjected to the tortures we inflict upon them, I cannot explain. And so I had all these amazing women in my life that I've been blessed to be in a relationship with. But I couldn't stop for them. You know, I couldn't stop for any reason. I couldn't stop eating, you know. Why? Because I'm a real Bill. You know, Bill drank oceans and oceans of alcohol, and I ate mountains and mountains of food to cope with my life. You know, my life was such a mess. And so here I am, you know, I got a lot of good reasons to stop, but I couldn't. And what I want to say is that, you know, when I dated this so-called recovered compulsive eater, I couldn't understand, like, the torture I had been inflicting on other women until I had those tortures inflicted upon me. You know, they say an alcoholic in their cups is an unlovely creature, but even when the food is down, you know, we're still compulsive overeaters. We still have these character defects, and those character defects are unlovely. And so even though, so I had to see, I had to feel that torture inflicted upon me by another compulsive eater to really understand the harm I was causing because I wasn't attending to my character defects. And so I know today that the only solution I have to stop is to make the relationship with my higher power the most important relationship. No other relationship with a human being is going to get me to stop. I have to make the relationship with my higher power the most important thing in my life. And when I do that, everything else will fall into place. And so I'm so grateful to know the solution and to, want to stop and stay stopped for my higher power, not for another human being, you know. So I'm just grateful to be in recovery and have a program and know that I'm working step 6 and 7, like my life depends on it right now, because I really want to change.
Please.
I really want to change and do better. And so thanks for letting me share, y'all.
Thank you, CK from California. Thank you to everyone who shared, and thank you to Team Thursday. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. And the share ID for this morning's meeting, Thursday, February the 19th, 7 a.m., is 23224. That's 23224. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And today, Wendy M. is going to read A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Hi, Wendy.
Hey, Lynn, thank you. Good morning. I'm Wendy M., recovered in North Carolina. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until